You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. With me, Trish McFarland. Trish, what's happening?
Hey, Steve Bowes. How are you?
I am well. I'm trying to enunciate clearly. I'm excited. It's the end of the
Why
year.
Why are you trying to enunciate clearly? Do you normally not enunciate?
I feel like every so clearly? Often I fade in and out of these shows, and I want my voice to be heard loud and clear.
And, very good. Okay. I like
that?
It.
Do Sounds
it.
Good?
I'm, Sounds
I'm
good
fired
to me,
up.
Yeah.
Fired up.
You are fired. Wait, is it? It's Fired Up Friday.
And it's the holidays, right? We're winding it down.
It is.
Holidays coming up. You're excited? Are you ready for the holiday season,
oh,
Trish?
Oh, my gosh.
In Casa
oh,
Trish?
Oh, no. Yeah, so, right. Full on, right in the middle of a move. You know, work transitions, life. I mean, my gosh, my whole life is upside down. No, I'm not ready. But that's okay. You know what? That's a good exercise is if you think that, you know, you're not in control sometimes. Yeah, try and throw everything all in like 2 weeks. You just kind of say, okay, it's fine that I don't have it all under control. It's totally fine. I feel really relaxed about it.
Well, that's good.
That.
So, you sound good.
Yeah.
You sound well. You sound like $100, as I like to say.
I know. I am like $100. That's about that's today.
Oh, man. So, hey, thanks.
No,
before I forget, thanks to our show sponsors, Trish, Virgin Pulse. Let's not forget them. Let's not forget Virgin Pulse.
Right, of course.
www.virginpulse.com. Thanks to them for all their support in 2016. Probably our last show of the year, I think, unless things change. Could be. We'll see. You know, it's prediction time, Trish. It's prediction season.
Oh, my goodness.
Should we make some predictions?
I don't know if you're like me. I cannot stand predictions. And my email is flooded with companies and blogs wanting me to make predictions about all sorts of things, which I have done none. I'm already sick of just seeing them start to pop up. The HR technology predictions for 2017 and the HR predictions, workforce predictions. It's a nightmare, really. I hate predictions. What are we? We're not fortune tellers here.
Yeah.
That just seems crazy to me a little bit.
I know. I've gotten quite a few of those requests as well. And I think the other problem with some of these predictions, especially the ones that get into technology, is you know, they're often just slight variations of things either we've already predicted in prior years might happen or things that are already going on, right? And they're going to evolve. It's the natural evolution of a particular trend. So call it, I don't know, mobile or, you know, big data or something like that, right? These things have been around for ages now, right? They're not new things. And so writing another piece that says, hey, in 2017, big data is going to be important for HR, that's, I don't know, just feel a little silly to write that. I'm not writing that.
It's just no longer, that's not a prediction. That's just reality. That's everyday life, right? And that's a good example. I think, you know, some of the other ones, it's like I was reading, disruption. Disruption is a big one now. Really? It's like we've been talking about disruption for 4 or 5 years already.
Right.
So to me, disruption is not a prediction for 2017. Talking about millennials. Candidate experience.
Millennials
the war
are
for
like
talent.
Old people now, like a lot of them, right? All right.
Oh, wait. Here's another one I read. I'm not even going to say where. Did you know performance reviews are dead?
What?
It's like, really? What? Wait. So that's just it. I mean, I feel like we needed to do a show on the non-predictions because all the predictions that I've seen so far out there, not one is new. Not one is new. They're all existing, happening in business right now, today, as we speak, now, in different degrees, but that's, to me, that's not telling any leader anything new that they haven't read for the last several years. So
yeah, I really would agree with you, Trish. I mean, I've not seen much that's really like, wow, that struck me as, boy, really? I've not heard of that, or is that really going to happen? That would be amazing if it did, right? I mean, look, I'm not knocking the folks who publish these things. Sometimes there are some interesting kind of elements in them. You can glean a little bit of kind of insight from some of these, and particularly if you're maybe your organization's a laggard a little bit when it comes to technology or comes to more innovative or modern kind of HR, HCM practices. I think you can get a little bit out of them, but for the most part, not again, right? So.
Well, I think too, though, and this you may not agree with me, but when I think back to when you're working in a corporate role, and not just HR, just a corporate role, period, your real job, if you're really thinking ahead, is just what can I do to impact the organization this year a little bit more, just a little bit more or different than I did last year? What do we
Right.
need to change up, right? It's a reset time. So I don't know. A prediction doesn't really get it for me. When I was in that role myself, and when I'm thinking about being in that role, that just doesn't tell me. I feel like I'd rather read something that says, here are some ideas of what you could really actually put into practice in your organization to change something, if you wanted to.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Trish. I think it's good. We're sort of in
Because,
agree we're yeah, we're in agreement on that.
yeah, because if I just make some predictions for people and tell them, hey, big data or millennials or whatever, well, to me, it's a little degrading to those leaders. To me, it sort of talks down to them, and I don't like that. I mean, I always felt like, who are people to come and tell me as a business person, what to focus on for next year? They don't
Right.
know. They don't know my business, and it's so unique. That's the other thing. Do we all want to be the same vanilla flavored approach to business? I think if you are, your business won't succeed. No, if you want
No.
your business to kick ass, you need to have some great things to focus on that make your business really unique, things that are specific to you, to your workforce, to your product, whatever. I don't know, just my opinion.
Well,
But
see.
it's our show, so
It's our show. You're
I
allowed.
can
We
have
can
that
have our.
opinion,
That's right. We can have our
right?
opinions here. So we have non-predictions then to talk about,
We
it sounds like to
do.
me. We have
I
just
feel like we do.
ideas to help you help your organization just become better, right? Just what can you do to improve as a leader, improve your organization, add more value, get a gold star at the end of the day. These are the kinds of things we thought about, we talk about today on the show.
Right.
We came up with about three. I've got three here on my list, Trish. Let's talk about them. Let's talk about the first one. I came up with this one, but I think you have already improved on the idea in our pre-show conversation. And
Oh, well, good.
we're calling this creative workforce planning. So what do we mean by
Right.
that? What do we mean by creative workforce planning? I have an
Well,
idea.
let me just say, in terms of workforce planning, this is one where I feel like this is not an HR specific one, even though HR is often very involved in workforce planning. But what I like about focusing on your workforce planning as a topic is that there are so many different aspects and intricacies within that that you could focus on that make your approach really unique. So it's not just, again, back to a more generic prediction for everyone to handle workforce planning the same way.
Right.
So what were some of your ideas? Because I know you and I were kind of even a little bit on a different page with regard to workforce planning and what that means for the
Yeah,
coming year.
I think the first bit is a bit of a mindset shift. Like while one of the predictions we've seen for many, many years and maybe some of the articles we've referenced earlier will have this prediction in it, this idea of the rise of the gig economy and the contingent workforce and all of that. I think that's part of it. But I also think in lots of organizations, including ones, I've seen and talked to and work with, I think that mindset shift is still not there, right? I still think that there's lots and lots of organizations, especially smaller and mid-sized organizations, really taking a traditional approach to workforce planning and management, that jobs are jobs. Jobs are still defined in a certain way, right? And the bias towards quote unquote the job in the traditional manner in which it's been constructed and been populated is still the prevalent paradigm. Oh man, I said paradigm. Someone take a
You
drink on that
did.
word.
Oh my goodness, that's awful.
but I couldn't think of a better one. But still the dominant paradigm by which we organize work and we fill work. There are some really good reasons for that, I still think, right? Some of them are regulatory and kind of benefits related to some extent, and some of them kind of are
Right.
societal. But I think organizations that don't loosen up their thinking, at least at first, and particularly leadership around those ideas, are going to kind of miss out on some of the opportunities that the predicted gig economy, so on, offers up to organizations. So thinking more openly and fluidly about how work will get accomplished and not how will we fill jobs. I think that's the first step, and that's kind of what I was thinking about. A good example is when we designed the logo, right? Or you basically took on the project of designing the logo, right, for H3HR, right? How we did that for, you know, and that's a small little example, but I think that's a really telling one, and I think is indicative of just a different way of thinking about work.
Right. So, yeah, being able to find people online who do certain skill-based tasks for money, and then you can, you know, make those arrangements and get what you need. I find that a lot too. I mean, maybe it's a little easier when you're in a consulting type role yourself, because you're able to rely on other consultants for those types of skills to come in and help you. And, you know, for me personally, whether that's hiring graphic designers or, you know, other writers or other people to help me in what I'm doing, I do think it's, you know, when I look back to, you know, maybe 10 years ago when it was really just sort of you had your full-time workers, your part-time workers, and that anybody who wanted to even work from home a day was like the outlier, right?
Right.
I do feel like that shift has happened. A lot of organizations have at least flexible type working arrangements somewhat where they can. Again, manufacturing, you're not going to be able to do that as easily. Certain government jobs, maybe not as easily, or different, you know, roles within healthcare or retail, obviously. But I do think that there is an open-mindedness that is coming with this idea of the gig economy, where people are trying to see, you know what, it probably does make sense from time to time to hire people for project work as opposed to hiring someone, you know, for the whole year, for example, for very specific skill-based tasks. I do think, too, and I saw this even just a couple years ago starting, as the baby boomers retire, they have a lot of technical ability and knowledge and skills that, again, you may not need that on a daily basis in your organization, but it might really make sense to hire them back to do project-based work, whether that's technology work, whether that's some sort of leadership coaching, for example. Like, we hear a lot of companies saying they really don't have, you know, strong leadership coaching within the organization. Well, maybe that's a way, you know. So I think we'll see companies who are successful when it comes to their workforce planning are just going to get more creative with it.
Right.
They're going to start bringing those people back.
Yeah, I like the idea. I was thinking, as you were talking, Trish, I was thinking about like this idea of having like almost like a roster or kind of a talent group, a talent pool, maybe that's a better way to say it, a talent pool that you cultivate and engage with over the long term, really. And so I think I'm not just talking about the one-off, hey, design this logo or this graphic for a website and do it one time and we'll never hear from you again. We might, but I think, you know, if that project is successful and the working relationship is sound and the value is there on both sides, that organizations will begin to develop like a roster or a talent pool of people who do those kinds of things that they can tap into really quickly and have success with, because they're starting to build the relationships, kind of like just long-term kinds of relationships with folks to do work that's more fluid, more flexible, more on demand, but not completely foreign. It's not like I think one of the challenges with this is, oh, now I've got to onboard, quote unquote, a brand new person all the time. Every time I need a task, it's not worth it. I'll just do it myself, right? Or I'll get someone else to do it. And there's some technologies that help in this as well. Like, we can probably, you know, not beat this to death, but the last thing I was thinking about in terms of technology was, I think we were talking about this the other day, like the Amazon Dash button, right? Like when you run out of detergent and Amazon's got that new button, you can just press the button and detergent will be on its way to you immediately. Like, maybe someday we'll have things like that, like, you know, for tasks and for skills and for project-based work that we need to do, like the workplace version of the Amazon Dash button that the manager can hit and that project gets, you know, spec'd out and staffed up almost immediately. I could see that coming someday.
Right.
Is that a prediction? Well, I shouldn't have done that. Oh.
Well, yeah, don't make a prediction.
Okay, I won't do that. Take that back.
No, but I think, too, it's also important to think it's not just about the task or skill-based type work, as we've always thought of it. It's about, I don't know if you saw the movie The Intern.
I did.
Where Robert De Niro, you know, comes back. I think that one of the things that we've lost over the years, when people do retire, when they, you lose that knowledge, and that's the thing. How do you capture that? How do you get a little bit of that back? And we move so fast. We're so focused on technology all the time and how technology makes things faster, better, what better, I'm using in quotes. But we lose a little bit of the humanity. Every time we take another step further, we do lose some of that. And so how do you, much like that movie where, the younger CEO is really learning some life skills from, a worker that's older than her.
Right.
I would love to see companies figure that out a little bit more. I would love to have, companies where you're assigned a mentor who is a retiree from wherever. Could be another type of industry. It could be another organization. Things like that where you actually continue your leaders' learning opportunities through external sources and hiring them that way.
Yeah, I would. That's a great,
So
again,
yeah.
a great idea and another example of creative planning, right? Thinking out of the,
Right.
thinking a little bit differently about how you're going to provide coaching and mentorship to your next generation of leaders, right? Excellent. Yeah,
Exactly.
love it. All right.
Exactly.
Love that. Love
So
that. Creative
that's
workforce
it.
planning.
Creative workforce planning, not a prediction. We think it's already happening, but hopefully it'll continue with more creativity.
Love it. All right, Trish, you go
So
take us to number two.
yeah, the next one was one that I kind of brought up, and it's really about this whole idea of, everywhere is big data, everywhere, that's been around, what, 5 or 6 years for predictions, I think.
Oh, easily.
Also around predictive analytics, right? We've seen and heard that one a million times. But I would say specifically, if I'm in a leadership role in any organization, it's about having a laser focus on data correlation and not on just data in general. So, for example, back to that idea of how can I, as in my role as a leader, HR or otherwise, find one correlation within our data that it impacts the bottom line? So that I can go to my boss, whether that's the CFO, whether it's just another supervisor, whatever, and say, look, I saw that there was a connection between this way that we're staffing, for example, or this way that we're hiring, or this whatever the data point is. And here's how, when I make an adjustment to that, it impacted the bottom line in a positive way. Because I think that that's measurable. It keeps it very small so that it's not overwhelming for anyone. It's not hard for anyone to understand. And once you start putting a couple of those together, that's when you start changing the way that the mindset works within the organization. And that's where we've struggled. Because when we just throw the words big data at a company or say we're going to give you predictive analytics, they need to see it's like a word problem when you think of like your kid, right? So I've got junior high kids, right? And they're doing learning algebra. When they have the equations, just rows of equations, you can learn a pattern to do it, but you don't really understand why.
Right.
Till you get to the very end, and then there's the few word problems where it actually shows you what the equation means. Same thing in business. Instead of just throwing predictive analytics at these organizations and saying, you should have it, here's how this technology is going to do it for you, you have to give them the why.
Yeah, I think
The
that's a
one why.
really good point, Trish. And a couple things on, that I thought of when you were talking about that is one, now everything pretty much seems measurable. If it's not measurable yet, it will be soon, right? So in a
Yes.
world where we can measure everything, it becomes much more difficult to determine what are the right things to measure, and then maybe more importantly, what are the right things to focus on, which are going to drive the business outcomes that you're seeking, as you described. And a lot, there's the famous phrase, I'm sure you've heard it, like that's in statistics and data analysis that says correlation does not imply causation, right? And we get
Right.
stuck on that
Yes.
a lot. But I would say maybe it doesn't always imply causation, but it usually implies something, right? And I think we can get caught up in often trying to identify what really causes outcomes versus, hey, this correlation is really strong, and maybe I can't prove that it causes certain outcomes, but it's likely influencing them to a pretty high degree. And I can stop worrying about proving things, and then this is where sort of the leaders and the managers' kind of guts come into play a little bit here. But it's informed. It's not it's informed instinct, I'd say, as well. And I think that can help lead you to, as you said, Trish, what are those one or two things that we really should be focusing on that will allow us to generate the best outcomes in this sea of data. And last thing I'll say on this, and you mentioned this, right, that predictive analytics have been predicted, for lack of a better word, for a while now, and there's lots of technology providers playing in this space and providing predictive analytic solutions to their customers, but they're not necessarily the right ones for you, right? You're letting vendors and solution providers kind of determine that this is important. So like if they come to you and say with the predictive analytics around flight risk, you automatically assume, well, that's really important to me, right? And it could be, but it might not be, right? And so I think it's really interesting what's happening here. I think there's lots of opportunity to get a little bit more focused to, as you said, Trish, find those one or two things that are really important and spend your time on them and think about your business in that way. So anyway, I love it. I love this. And I think maybe we should spend some time on this year, maybe do some more shows around this and how to get there and how to ask those right questions and how to determine what are those right things to focus on. Because I think that's probably an interesting follow-up to this conversation.
Oh, and I agree. And I think that's where it comes into being very unique and specific. And so it's not, you know, managing a business, managing people, it's part science and part art.
Right.
And so I think it's just when you go, you know, maybe for many years it was too much of an art and no science, right? And now, you know, obviously technology and some specific ones have, you know, science built into them, and that's extremely important. But how do you sort of blend the two? Which, if we can just go on to sort of the last one, which I know you came up with, because I think it gets to the art a little bit more, is around how do you identify what those things are that you can't measure, sort of those gut
right.
check things, right? And how do you keep those important as well? So we've obviously said it's important to hone in on what is measurable for your unique organization. And it's not the same. It's not, we talked before about it, it's not a vanilla approach. If we all just do the same, if we all listen to the same predictions, if we all try and do the same thing, no one succeeds because we're all going to be doing the same thing. That's not a good path, if you ask me. But how do you take the science aspect and really build that out for your organization so you're getting specific results? But then if you want to talk a little bit about sort of identifying those things that are in your gut as a leader.
Yeah. No, so
why that's important.
Right. Trish, on the Steve Bose blog that I've had for a little while.
Wait, you have a blog?
I do. In fact, I wrote today, or I wrote it last
Maybe
night.
Maybe I should start one. This blog thing sounds interesting.
That's fun. You write the articles, people comment on them sometimes.
It's a
whole thing now.
People read them?
Yeah, so I write about sports a lot on the blog. That's why I brought it up, and to remind you that I had a blog. But I write about sports a lot, and there's a concept in sports. I was watching a basketball game the other night, Shaq, right? I know. And they were talking about a particular player. It doesn't matter which player. It is a veteran player on the far side of his career on the team and, you know, not scoring too many points anymore. But the announcers were talking about kind of the leadership and the mentorship he provides to the team, who has lots of younger players who are just kind of learning the ropes in the NBA. And so they were discussing like why it has been a good idea, they think, and the team thinks, to have this particular veteran player on the roster, even though he's not really contributing on the court. He's not playing all that much in the actual games. He's not scoring many points when he's in there, you know, those kinds of things. But they said he's a really important player, and the young players all talk about this veteran player very respectfully, but they're happy he's there. They're learning from him, so on and so forth. And so it made me think, this is in sports, they call these guys, quote unquote, glue guys, GLUE, because they help to bind the team together. They often serve as a liaison between some of the players or the talent and the coaching staff and the ownership, right? Because they know how to navigate those relationships. They're a little bit more trusted, perhaps, by the coaches and the owners of the team, because they know the ropes. They've been around the league for a long time. And so they're valuable on teams, but it's a very hard value to measure, even in an activity or a sport where every single thing is measured, right? Every action on the basketball court in the NBA is measured. Everything, every pass, every shot, every foul, right? You name it. Every motion on the court, every play is captured by advanced video technology and analyzed to the nth degree. And but you can't really measure the contribution that that veteran player is making. But everybody knows it's important, right? That's the really interesting thing. So think about that that metaphor or analogy kind of in work and in workplaces. How do we get a little bit better at finding those people in organizations and then not just finding them, but sort of measuring or appreciating properly the contribution that they're making to the organization? I think that's a really interesting thing to think about this year. I don't know. What do you think about that, Trish? I'm gonna take a sip of Diet Dr. Pepper and think about what I just said for a second.
No, I agree. I think that there are those people, and maybe that's what HR leaders, you know, when you're at SHRM and you're talking to, you know, people that are really working in the trenches, that's what they've been struggling with for years, with this idea around data, is that do you lose sight of some of that gut instinct that you have about those type of employees, where they're important, but you can't show necessarily on paper how they're important. It's just a little harder to measure. When we were talking before the show about it, it made me think, I can think back to every employer I've ever worked for and name one or two of those people in every organization.
Right.
I remember very early in my career, I worked for a company where the guy had been there maybe 20 plus years at that point, and there was a reduction in force. And of course, you know, he came up as someone who was going to be let go. When he was let go, the backlash among all the employees was just ridiculous.
Right.
It was so strong. And no one could put their finger on why, but he really impacted every single person in the organization. So I think from a perspective of, if I'm a leader in an organization and I'm thinking about your point, what I would be saying is, okay, how do I identify those people, or hopefully I already know who they are. How can I make sure that senior leadership, for example, knows their value, that that's very important, that we hold on to them, that we don't, you know, don't lose them.
Yeah, Trish, I totally agree. And I think there's this has got a little bit of echoes of some of the stuff that maybe was talked about earlier in the decade, like the around social network analysis inside workplaces. And the funny thing was, like, that was one of those predictions that got predicted for years and years, and then nothing really sort of happened to it. And I think some of that is there. So anyway, I would just think about that really, really explicitly this year, deliberately. Ask questions like, you know, who's in the room, right, when good ideas happen, right? Or who supports my ideas at work, or who just makes this workplace feel better, right? I think some of those things, who do you go to when you have that question about what to do, or who do you go to manage a difficult relationship with another coworker, those kinds of things. Those are the
you
kinds of questions you can get to help unearth some of this, I think.
I want to stop you before you get too far past what you said. We talk a lot about culture, right? That comes up all the time in conversations in our industry. And what you just said to me kind of encapsulates that. And it's, who makes this workplace feel better?
Yeah.
That's it. Who makes you feel better at work? And maybe that's not someone in your department. Maybe
right.
It's someone else. But yeah, how do you identify that person, and how do you keep them?
It could be the person who cleans up. It could be the person in the cafeteria. It could be anybody, right? It could be the guy who works out in the parking lot.
Right. Well, and often it is. It's people who are often in positions where, you know, I remember when I worked at the children's hospital, it was the guy that delivered the mail. Oh my gosh. He, you know, because he saw everybody. He was all around the hospital every day. He knew all of the stories about the kids who were, you know, were there. And just, he was so joyful. He just walked around spreading joy. Yes, he gave you your mail, but that was really not what his job was. So it was like, how do you have jobs for that, you know? Where just spreading joy around your office is valuable.
Yeah, incredibly valuable and difficult to measure and impossible to replace with automation or technology, right? So
exactly.
Really,
exactly.
Really important.
And you know what? Maybe that's instead of a prediction, maybe that's the challenge too, as an employee trying to be more of that person in the new year.
I'm going to try. I'm going to try it on this show, really. This is my.
Are you going to be the joy spreader on the show?
I'm going to try to be more joyful on the show in 2017. I am.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm
so excited. I can't wait.
You will be able to handle it, I'm sure. Awesome. Trish, yeah. We should probably, you know, get holidays.
We should wrap it up. It's Christmas Eve.
It is.
Right? And, yeah, we should probably wrap it up. But.
All right. Well, this has been fun. So no predictions. No just some things to think about, hopefully to make yourself and your organizations better in 2017. We'll probably follow up on some of these ideas throughout 2017 as well, because I think they're all really, really interesting. So thanks so much for listening, checking out the show. Trish, thank you. I hope you have wonderful holiday, and Merry Christmas to everyone at Casa McFarlane.
Thank you. Same back to you and your family.
Thank you very much. And thanks to all the listeners. Subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, everywhere you get apps. Just search for HR Happy Hour. Lots of fun next year. Thanks to Virgin Pulse. And we will see you next time on the HR Happy Hour show. Bye for now. Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.